کشور در حال پیشرفت را که با این شهادت ها نکند می شود.
This country is making progress. It will not be stopped by such martyrdoms. They thought that by such martyrdoms or blows or criminal actions, they can slow down the Iranian nation's movement forward. But to no avail, the Iranian nation treads the path of progress while following their imam. And we have announced this on several occasions. And you do not know the Iranian nation very well, despite your claims, and that you are making serious miscalculations. We have announced on several occasions that you should learn more about the Iranian nation and do not compare it to other nations. Do not compare this establishment with ordinary establishments in the world. This is a different establishment. You're claiming that you know us. You hatch plots and seditions and you launch hybrid wars, but you face continued defeats. You launched a military war, you launched a cyber warfare, you launched a media warfare, you launched political war, you launched an economic war, you launched conflicts in various areas, and you made use of all your might and power. You launched factional conflicts and you made use of all your capacities, but you see that the great Iranian nation treads the path of Haj Qasem Soleimani and follows the guidelines of our wise leadership, and all these led to your failure in all these wars. And you saw that what you did with respect to a cyber warfare, and you actually hacked all the gas stations throughout the country, and you thought that through such a hostile move you can actually deal a blow, but you failed. And you made use of all your capacities at international organizations against the Iranian nation. You launched psychological warfare, and you made use of all your media outlets in the economic war. You just made new figures. You fabricated figures and digits in the foreign currency and gold markets, and this is not an analysis, it's a news. You thought that you can make progress in political, economics, and media warfare, but today, this gathering and similar ones throughout the country convey this message to you that you have failed in all these wars, and you will continue to fail. The great Iranian nation follows the wise leadership, Imam Khamenei. May God protect him. And also treads the path of Martyr Soleimani, and we'll take steps for realizing the annual motto, that is production, job creation, and science-based. And we have made considerable efforts in the field of production, and many factories have become operational. In the field of production, commerce, and oil and non-oil exports, and many other economic arenas, we have made considerable efforts. And we were sanctioned and threatened, but that will never stop us. When entering Mosalla, the prayer ground, a young girl told me that I take oath to the blood of Martyr Soleimani, a 10-year-old girl. She said that we stand by this revolution, and the establishment. Tell the officials to maintain self-reliance, to maintain their self-confidence and rely on God. And the blood of Martyr Soleimani will bring about triumph for the nation. And from now on, we will see more victories. I offer condolences and congratulations to the family and the household of Martyr Soleimani and the people have always supported us and will continue to support us. This is a source of honor for his household, and you are all making efforts to show that he does not just belong to the Iranian nation. He belongs to the Muslim Ummah. He belongs to all freedom seekers in the world today. The papers, the articles, the letters in cyberspace, the books, and whatever has been written in the past few years regarding the virtues of Martyr Soleimani, they all indicate the fact that this is a message conveyed to him that we have an allegiance with you and we will stand by the revolution and the Islamic values, and also Velayat al-Faqih, the rule by the supreme jurist. And to conclude, I have to say that
Imam Hussein,
Speaking of Imam Ali, Imam Hussein, Abul Fazl, and also you paid pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace be upon him. I wonder what you whispered to Imam Reza, but when you were standing at that holy shrine, I was guessing that you were demanding martyrdom from Imam Reza. What your daughter said, that your wish came true, and I had the perception, at that time that when I saw Martyr Soleimani's tearful eyes, I was wondering what he was demanding from Imam Reza. I had this in my mind that he was asking for martyrdom. We all vow with you, Martyr Soleimani, and all our officials and authorities who tread your path across this country, all those who are serving the people in every organization or institution in any part of this country, they are all vowing and assuring the nation that they will continue to defend the Islamic revolution and support the people and dedicate and continue to serve the people in a dedicated manner. And I assure the nation that the blood of Martyr Soleimani conveys this message that all must make efforts in order to serve the people and remove hardships. This is a message we received from Martyr Soleimani's life, and we will continue to make efforts to serve the people in a dedicated manner. And Martyr Soleimani, please pray for us. I address the families of martyrs to pray for us, and I assure you that this country is making progress, and we have a very bright future ahead of us, and this country has ample capacities, and with the blessings of God and with the leaders' guidelines and with the government serving the people, all the problems and hardships will be removed. And through your participation, all the problems will be resolved. I conclude at this point. Let me commemorate all the martyrs of Hezbollah and the resistance front, and the martyrs in Iraq and Syria, also Mr. Abu Mahdi, dear Abu Mahdi, and the martyrs and the companions of Martyr Soleimani, and salute their souls.
صمیمانه سپاسگزاریم از حضور ریاست محترم جمهوری جناب آقای رئیسی و صمیمانه از حضور ارزشمند شما مهربانان نونهالان عزیز و گرانقدر در گروه رسا.
I would like to thank President Raisi for his address. The children are also here. They have come here and attended this commemorative event for Martyr Soleimani, and they want to present their gift And we have this Rasa group, and they want to present their gift to you all. Allow me to thank my colleagues at various IRIB channels, IRIB Channel 1, 3, and the news channel, or 4 channel, and also my colleagues at IRIB Radio Department, Iran Radio and Moghavemat Radio, that is Resistance Radio. I wish to thank them all.
شهید ابو مهدی المهندس و همرزمان شهیدش تشکر و قدردانی بکنم به اتفاق شما بینندگان ارجمند و به اتفاق جمعیت شایسته و پرشوری که در مصلا زینت بخش جمع ما در مصلای بزرگ امام رضوان الله تعالی علیه گردیده اند.
So these are live images that we are receiving from the Iranian capital Tehran.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You just listened to a live coverage of a keynote speech by Iranian President Dr. Ebrahim Raisi on the occasion of the third martyrdom anniversary of the top IRGC General Qasem Soleimani. Iranian President Dr. Ebrahim Raisi saluted the iconic Iranian general, the anti-terror icon, Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani. President Raisi also talked about the great personality and characteristics of this great Iranian general. He said, "The martyred general changed himself, and this is necessary. Before we can change society, we have to change ourselves, and this is exactly what the martyred general did. He changed himself before he changed society." He said, "The Islamic Revolution produces a cycle in which people develop and grow, and Martyr Soleimani was one such person. He grew and developed within the sacred Islamic system." And he said Martyr Soleimani was instrumental in building up and developing and expanding the axis of resistance, the axis of resistance which resisted U.S. and Zionist hegemony in this region. President Raisi said, "We say with pride that in our time, Martyr Soleimani was the iconic fighter against terrorism in our region. He shattered the myth of invincibility of the United States and also of the Israeli regime." President Raisi said, "Martyr Soleimani's great achievement was that he shattered the myth of invincibility of the United States." He said, "We all saw with pride just how many people, the multitude of people, the enormous crowd of people who attended the funeral of this great Iranian general. Martyr Soleimani was a supporter of the oppressed people. He served the people dedicatedly." President Raisi also said elsewhere in his remarks that we will never forego the blood of Martyr Soleimani. He said, "We will bring those who perpetrated this crime, all those who perpetrated this crime, to justice." President Raisi said, "The enemies of Iran have instigated a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic. You have, but," he said, "you will experience defeat after defeat." He said, "The enemies have started an economic war, a psychological war, a media war, a military war, all sorts of wars against the Islamic Republic." But he said, "The enemies give false figures and false statistics to discourage the Iranian people. But the Iranian people follow their wise leadership of their leader, and they follow the path of the great martyr, Qasem Soleimani." He also said, "We will stand by the rule of the supreme jurist until our last drop of blood, until our last breath." President Raisi also said, "The future of Iran is extremely bright. All of us should have every confidence in our future." He said, "The future of Iran is very bright indeed." And he also saluted all the companions of Martyr Soleimani, the great Iranian general, and in particular Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, the top Iraqi, the head of the the deputy commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, the Hashid al-Shaabi, the great companion of Martyr Soleimani. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, he also saluted Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and all his companions and all those who worked with him. So this was the keynote speech by the Iranian president, Dr. Ebrahim Raisi, before President Raisi made his speech. We also heard from Zainab Soleimani, the young daughter of the great martyr general Qasem Soleimani. Zainab Soleimani also talked about her father, the characteristics and qualities of her father. And there was a short speech by the young daughter of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Okay, it's time for a short break. We'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we shall continue with our rolling coverage of the third martyrdom anniversary of top IRGC General Qasem Soleimani. We go over to Press TV headquarters to continue with our rolling coverage.
They're a country, and they definitely the heart. But he believed that Iran's president believed that through assassinating General Qasem Soleimani, the enemies thought that the people, even the people of the world and freedom seekers around the world, will stop the path, will not continue the path of General Qasem Soleimani. But actually, the legacy of Qasem Soleimani, which is the legacy of resistance, has actually grown much larger across the region. And we see more and more people joining anti-terrorism carings and resistance movements spearheaded by General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iranian officials, including Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Salman. Please stand by. We will get you more updates from Tehran's Grand Masala. Actually, I have to apologize. I made a mistake. I thought this ceremony was held in Imam Khomeini's mausoleum, but it is in Tehran's Grand Masala. We are joined by Mr. Khoshesham. Thank you very much for joining us. As Salman just mentioned, when the U.S. plan to attack General Qasem Soleimani, they calculated certain things, probably thinking that they would reduce the influence that Iran has in the region. But, well, to their disappointment, General Qasem Soleimani got a ball rolling. He changed the landscape, the geopolitical landscape, and his legacy remains. And Iran is even more influential after this particular assassination. So where do you think the U.S. went wrong? Which part of the story didn't they get?
Hello, and thanks for having me. Well, personally speaking, I do believe that Lieutenant General Soleimani's assassination by the Americans was just one part of a very detailed puzzle, a very overly speaking, they have done many other steps to contain Iran's regional power. You know, back to the history, some 20-something years ago when they invaded Afghanistan and then Iraq, and then their 38 regional bases around Iran were all posing threats to Iran. So it was just then that Qasem Soleimani started his regional move. He mobilized young lads across the region from Afghanistan to Iraq and elsewhere. And they were fighting U.S. occupation and hegemonic rule and cruelty in the region. And then he could break the United States resolve after spending now, of course, $8,000, then $6,000 billion of spendings, military spendings in the region, after sustaining so many casualties. And then they accepted and conceded defeat, and now they have stepped back. Much back, and the numbers are lower than before, and they left Afghanistan. They were forced to leave Iraq as well. So this was done by Qasem Soleimani right from the beginning. And then it was not just that. Iran's influence also extended to the Mediterranean, according to all geopolitical experts throughout the world, according to U.S. officials, and even the Israelis, that are now feeling besieged by Iran or the resistance front. This was Qasem Soleimani. He left a role model. This is a global role model that could be practiced universally by everyone. And this is one of his, you know, the main heritage probably, that you could mobilize people, give them motivation, if it's divine motivation. You could be lower in numbers. You could have a budget that could never be compared with what the U.S. has done, you know, has spent in this region. But you could win the war, and you could defeat the tyrant of the time. So this was Qasem Soleimani. Everyone, I mean, the enemies, the terrorist state of the United States and the Zionist regime, terrorist regime, they should be afraid of him, of course. They knew that if he was moving along the path the same, then they would be really in bad shape soon. But what they failed to calculate was that his path would continue. It's not just Qasem Soleimani, it's the IRGC Quds Force, it's the IRGC, and now he was replaced by Ghani. And if it hadn't been Ghani, there could have been too many others. The path is the same, the strategies are the same as his successor, Ghani, he said. Nowadays, the resistance front is carrying out some 40 to 50 operations each day in Israel. And this would be even increased soon because the Israelis are aggravating the situation, especially after Netanyahu came to office with this radical right, you know, extremists. So they have failed to gain. Of course, they have inflicted much harm on us. Qasem Soleimani can never be replaced. But the same way that Ghani can never be replaced or compared with anyone. But the strategies are the same. Strategies of Iran and IRGC and IRGC Quds Force, you know, were designed by Qasem Soleimani even for 2 years after his martyrdom. I mean, he left such strategies and he left the plans for his successor. And Ghani is a strategist himself, the man in shadow, the shadow man, I don't know what they call him. He is not the one, you know, that's very much inclined to appear in the media, except for some speeches that he makes about Qasem Soleimani or sometimes about Israel. But he likes very much to stay in the shadow. And this is worrying the Israelis and Americans both. They know that Qasem Soleimani was a top commander of the Islamic Revolution. They have assassinated, they've done terror attack on Qasem Soleimani. Okay, fine. But he was just one of too many commanders and too many others who believe in the Islamic Revolution. And Islamic Revolution may not stop. Maybe some few years ago, if you were in Latin America, they didn't know much about Qasem Soleimani or Islamic Revolution. They knew Iran, but not about the IRGC, not about Qasem Soleimani. But now, many across the globe, including in Latin America and elsewhere, they have found an icon that they are pursuing, that they are following, and they are trying to replay this role model. And this is the path of Qasem Soleimani that stays alive, as we believe in Islam, that martyrs are alive, they're not dead. And this is very specially and true when it comes to Qasem Soleimani. There are many people who like to become like him, to go and put their feet in there, his foot trace, and he is the one that has left us with a treasure in many aspects, especially when it comes to the region, especially when it comes to the Israeli regime and the United States. He has left a treasure that's called the Resistance Front.
Exactly. I'm very sorry to cut you off right there, but that is particularly the most important thing that's left from Qasem Soleimani, and basically the reason why all of those calculations of hegemonic powers were wrong. We also have with us Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator, joining us from Sana'a. Mr. Al-Bukhaiti, we were just discussing the axis of resistance, or the resistance front, as it is referred to, the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani. You are in Yemen. Tell us more about the influence and the legacy of Qasem Soleimani in Yemen and in the fight that the Yemenis people are fighting since 2015.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, Yemen is one of the main countries which actually has joined the axis of resistance since the revolution of September 2014, when Ansarullah Houthi and Yemenis have overthrown the Hadi government and as well the former regime of Ali Abdullah Saleh, which was actually loyal to United States and its policy in the region, and as well to the Zionist state policy in the region. And Qasem Soleimani, he was, as we call him in Yemen, is the commander and the brain of the resistance against the Zionist state. And of course, it was a huge loss for the United States to successfully assassinate him, but his strategy, his method is still on the ground. I mean, you cannot end the war by killing one person. We remember that the former regime of Yemen has killed Sayyid Hussein Badreddin al-Houthi, but after that, his brother, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, has led the fight against that regime, and now he's leading the fight against 17 countries, one of the richest countries in the region, like Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and other Persian Gulf Arab nation, and as well the United States and Britain, and as well the Zionist state, total support for those countries in their attack against Yemen. And we see that Yemenis are actually still fighting back, and they're getting stronger and stronger. And I believe that the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, it will bring more thousands of Qasem Soleimanis, because as long as the resistance will focus its fight against United States policy and interference in Yemen, and as well the Zionist state occupation of Palestine, I believe that this assassination actually will add more fight against the United States and Israel.
That is absolutely right. So let's continue that discussion with Mr. Khoshcheshm, who is here with us in the studio. Mr. Khoshcheshm, you just heard our guest from Yemen. And basically, I think what we need to focus more on when we're discussing the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani, I clearly remember the final years before the assassination of the general. He had conquered the hearts of everyone in the region. It didn't matter which political group or party or affiliation people had. Everyone loved him, particularly in Iran. It was very obvious that he had been able to transcend generations, political groups, affiliations, everything. Everyone loved him. What was the secret?
Well, there are many answers to that. First answer is his behavioral attitude and the way he approached others. He was truly kind, and he was kind to anyone. I mean, it was not just the revolutionaries or the IRGC or, no, even the youngsters who approached him. They may not, they could have been, not in good terms with the Islamic Revolution, but he embraced them. I remember quite well, once he said that when I'm on a plane, my family was coming back from Mashhad, and they said, suddenly we saw someone with his family come into the plane, and he was Qasem Soleimani. And even those that didn't respect the, Islamic code of dressing, or they appeared to be not in good terms with the Islamic revolution, or they didn't care about these things. And They came to embrace him, and they wanted to have selfies, and they sat to him and talked to him. And he was very accepting and liked it. And I remember quite well in a video, he said, he was speaking, and he said, this happens when I'm on the plane. Those that are revolutionaries, they don't need me. They know what to do, what not to do. I personally, like very much those that have less information about the Islamic Republic and the revolution, or they are not in good terms with them. I want them to come to me and set this to me. And this was happening. Everyone loved him. Even before his martyrdom, and before the U.S. terror attack on Lieutenant General Soleimani, I remember pretty well, there was a BBC Persia that's an opposition of the Islamic Republic, fed and financed and funded by the U.S. Foreign Secretary's office. Those that appear on the outlet are enemies of the Islamic Republic. But when it came to Qasem Soleimani, at least three experts said, no matter we are enemies of the Islamic Republic or not, we need to admire him. That's second part, not because of, the second answer, that's not because he was kind, but that's because he saved a region, including Iran, from terrorism, from Daesh, the ISIS or ISIL, whatever they call them. He saved even the world. Let's remember that before Iran command, the Iranian troops and the resistance front commanded by Qasem Soleimani, defeated the Daesh group, terrorist group. The Daesh was killing people across Europe. Let's remember the terrorist attack in Madrid, in London, in Nice, in Paris, and elsewhere. They were killing even more and more people across the globe. They had just raised the flag of their own caliphate in China. In Xinjiang province. And they were about to start the same in the Philippines and in many other, many other Muslim lands and countries. Who defeated them except for Qasem Soleimani and the resistance front? So in that aspect, not only he should be adored and admired and loved, and he's been by the original nations, but also the entire globe should thank him. The same way that Petraeus and the top military brass and the Pentagon appeared on a Channel 4 BBC production. And they said, yes, he is a top enemy, but a respectable one. And it was, they were asked, especially Petraeus was asked, if Qasem Soleimani was a top anti-terrorism commander killing Daesh, and if Daesh is the enemy of the United States, therefore this move has produced benefits, has yielded benefits much for the United States as well, because Daesh, maybe, yes, Qasem Soleimani never killed them for the United States, of course, he defeated them for the sake of Islam and the regional nations, but they also, that was a collateral benefit, actually. Americans are in the habit of inflicting collateral damage on others, but now they were receiving collateral benefit from Qasem Soleimani. And he agreed. I mean, Petraeus said, yes, that's right. Maybe we could say that we shared interests wantedly or unwantedly, whatever happened. He did us a favor in that aspect. So even his enemies respected him because of his courage, wisdom, because of, you know, saving the whole world with the help of the resistance front, the IRGC Quds Force, and others. Qasem Soleimani saved the world from the danger and the threat of terrorism. And they should be thanking him and Hezbollah of Lebanon and the resistance front rather than enlisting them in blacklists in the list of terrorism. They did it with Hezbollah, I mean the Europeans. This means, okay, we don't care if you've killed our enemy and saved us. Okay, fine. We sanction you. Next time, don't get into this kind of trouble. Let them kill us. Okay, fine. You want this to happen? Really? Then you're blacklisting IRGC Quds Force, because of saving your citizens. This is somehow astounding.
It doesn't make sense. Actually, that's the next thing I wanted to ask you, Mr. Khoshchesh. Well, of course, as you elaborated in detail why we refer to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in Persian as Sardar Dilha, which literally means the commander of hearts. And basically, it also raises a question here. Since he killed the enemies of the United States, are those really the enemies of the United States? Maybe behind the curtains, they were friends. And that's why the United States didn't actually benefit from Daesh being defeated in the region. They wanted maybe the Daesh or other terrorist groups like that to be present in the region.
Yeah, I was talking about the citizens, actually. That explains exactly why the Europeans and Americans have been blacklisted in the IRGC. We have too many confessions from American top American officials acknowledging that they have been at least accomplices in Daesh crimes, in ISIS crimes. To begin with, Hillary Clinton actually once acknowledged that maybe we were guilty because of the start of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, because we left them unattended. Okay, fine, this is not your role. Your role has been much more outstanding. When Hillary received a cable from his errand boy, the national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, in which Jake Sullivan was actually advising her that Al-Qaeda in Syria is fighting on our side. This was released by the WikiLeaks. Better than that, General Michael Flynn appeared. I mean, Michael Flynn used to be national security advisor of Donald Trump. Before that, under Obama, he headed the Pentagon Intelligence Department. He told, actually, Al Jazeera America, Mehdi Hassan was the anchor, that they knew that Daesh and Al-Qaeda were about to establish a caliphate in eastern Syria and western Iraq. Their informants, information network, they had gathered lots of data, they knew about it, and they informed the White House, the Obama White House, and then Obama took no action, which means he gave a green light to Daesh to start this caliphate. And better than that, probably, is that he was asked by Mehdi Hassan three times, you took no action, really. You knew it, and you took no action. He said, yes. Obama, White House, gave a green light by, their silence. But General Martin Dempsey, under Obama, he was the chief of staff of the United States Armed Forces, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, actually. And he appeared at a Senate hearing. Lindsey Graham, the close friend of Donald Trump, actually, he headed the that hearing. He chaired it, and he was the head of, I believe, the Defense Committee at the Senate. He asked him, I mean, the whole hearing was wondering, that was in 2014, and everyone was wondering what's happening in Iraq after Syria, who's in charge, who is nurturing, feeding, arming the terrorist Daesh, who? And is us or somebody else? And Martin Dempsey said, yeah, it's our Arab allies. And he was asked which ones three times. He said, Saudi Arabia and our allies. So when you put all these pieces alongside each other, alongside too many other confessions, like what Donald Trump once said about the role of Hillary Clinton and Obama in the creation of ISIS, he was fed, actually, by Lindsey Graham, who had just come to him from the Senate hearing session that I just said, 2 years before the 2016 election, presidential elections in the U.S., and he was fed with the information, and he knew what he was talking about when Donald Trump said, you two created ISIS. Yeah, of course, he was wilder than them. This doesn't mean that it was just Hillary Clinton and Obama. No, it's the United States and the strategy. But when you put all these pieces alongside each other, you come up with the overall picture that it was a proxy warfare of the United States and its allies against the resistant front. Otherwise, why was Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the ISIL leader, the then ISIL leader's response to the question, why are you moving and advancing eastwards rather than westwards? All Muslim groups, all Islamic groups, jihadi groups, they move westward towards Israel. But you don't go to Israel, you're moving eastward from Syria to Iraq. He said, because we want to next go to Iran. The Israelis are our cousins, and we are moving towards Iran. That explains everything. The ones that nurtured, funded, armed the terrorist group, al-Nusra, Fatah al-Sham, whatever they are called, ISIS and others, they are very known capitals, known regimes, Wahhabi regimes. It's not just a product of Saudi Arabia or the UAE or some others. Israel and the United States were also, working on that. They wanted to weaken the resistant front and destroy Syria and Iraq and Lebanon alongside the greater Middle East plan that they had to, push them into collapse. And they've been now, after they were defeated because of Qasem Soleimani and, IRGC Quds Force and the resistance front, Hezbollah, Hashd al-Shaabi, and many others, many in Syria. After that, they continued the war, actually, in different realms, like in soft areas and semi-hard areas, through hybrid warfare, actually, through sanctions, terror, assassination, instigating riots, and as well as media warfare, psychological operations, cyber warfare. We've been experiencing the most complete, actually, formula of this hybrid warfare that they have developed in Iran, but they have been doing the same to Lebanon, to Syria, and Iraq to destabilize these countries and push them into collapse. So that's exactly when, when before they started this hybrid warfare, this new round of warfare, after they failed twice. Once they invaded the region, they failed because of Qasem Soleimani. The second time, proxy warfare in the second decade of this century, and then they failed again because of Qasem Soleimani. So this time, they started with assassinating Qasem Soleimani before going to the third round. In this third round, they hoped that they could destabilize the whole resistance from Iran, stretching from Iran to Lebanon through this hybrid warfare. And their first move was starting with Abraham Accord, and the second move was the terror attack on Qasem Soleimani. But still, they have failed. They have failed again and again and again, though they might have the power in media warfare, they might have good terrorists, and they might have a full Pentagon of terrorists, Israeli army filled with terrorists. They might have, you know, the economic power, but they have failed for the past more than four decades now. And they will. And soon, maybe in the next few months, with the first, you know, next error that they do, especially the Netanyahu administration, they will come to realize how wrong they've been on this path.
Well, there's very little time and so many topics to cover when it comes to General Qasem Soleimani. I'm going to have to let you go, Mr. Khoshesh.
Thank you.
And let's go back to Mr. Hussein Al-Bukhaiti from Sana'a. We were just discussing the reason why Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is referred to as the Commander of Hearts. Tell us more about how the younger generation perceive Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani there in Yemen.
They look up to General Qasem Soleimani, and he conquered all the heart of the people, not only in Yemen, in all Arab countries, and as well Islamic world, and as well in other countries, because he was the one who actually united all the resistance toward one goal, which is against the Zionist occupation of Palestine as well, and against the United States foreign policy and war on our region or any other region, because he was actually using two methods. He had done everything he can, and as well he gave everything, has given everything he had to just focus on our main enemy. Israel is not the enemy only of Iran, of others. Qasem Soleimani was just looking for justice. He was not looking for a status or looking for money or anything. He just wanted justice in the Arab world, justice especially for the Palestinian people. And why the United States actually did it like that, even though, as our previous guests have said, that fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda, it might have benefited the United States. It's actually is the opposite. United States of America and the Zionist state, they were actually benefiting from the existence of Al-Qaeda in our region. We remember that during the Afghanistan fight against the Soviet Union occupation of Afghanistan, the United States, with the money of Saudi Arabia and weapons from the United States, and with the training camp inside Pakistan, with the support of the Pakistani intelligence, they have actually created those extremists. They have created Taliban, and we see so many videos of at that time the Minister of Defense of United States, when he was there talking to those extremists, that as he said, Allah is with you and you have to fight your enemy, and they created Taliban. The same thing in Syria and in Iraq, they have created ISIS as an example. Jabhat al-Nusra, United States was directly supporting Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria, but after a few years, when they have seen that al-Nusra has failed actually to fight the resistance and as well to fight the Syrian Arabic army, they have declared that al-Nusra, that they are a terrorist group. They were trying as well to do the same thing in Yemen, but Yemenis were actually aware of that, and they have that revolution, and they fought back, and they have driven Al-Qaeda of many areas. If the United States was really, really against Al-Qaeda. So, and if they were really actually benefiting from what Qasem Soleimani was doing, fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS, they wouldn't actually have killed him. They would actually let him do whatever he's good in doing by fighting ISIS, Al-Qaeda. But actually, Qasem Soleimani, he has actually destroyed the only and the biggest and the strongest tools of the United States and Zionist state in our region, which Al-Qaeda and ISIS. We've seen that Hillary Clinton, in one interview or in a Congress committee, she said, we are fighting now the people that we are supporting. I mean, she was talking about in Afghanistan. I mean, they could, as an example, did a mistake. They support the group, and that group, Al-Qaeda, has turned against them. But they did the same in Iraq by creating ISIS as well, creating Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria, in Yemen.
Mr. Al-Qaeda, since you're mentioning the very important issues that we want to discuss with our other guests, let's also bring in Mutaz al-Weva, Islamic scholar from Beirut. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name right, Mr. al-Weva. So we have you on the phone. If you could please tell us your perception of the way the hegemonic powers, the U.S. in particular, has divided terrorists into good terrorists and bad terrorists. And, of course, the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is actually a testimony to the fact that the U.S. actually wants terrorism to exist in the region.
Of the United States for the last almost four to five decades, and it's a policy that they inherited of the British, and we saw in the early 1930s and moving on into the 40s, particular Zionist terrorist organizations funded by the British, like the Stern Gang and the Haganah, who were responsible for committing grave massacres and paving the way for the establishment of the Zionist regime. And some of these groups even turned against the British and began to, and they were responsible for the King David, for example, hotel bombing, which killed the British the British representative to the occupied territories. So yeah, this is a policy which the Americans have inherited of the British, and we've seen where in several instances, at least in the last 11 to 12 years in Syria and in Iraq and other places in the world, where there are terrorists that the United States will fund and even provide air support to. So we would see in instances in Syria where Jabhat al-Nusra would be in conflict with another group such as Tahrir al-Sham before the advent of ISIS, we would see that the United States will provide air support, or if there was between Jabhat al-Nusra and the Syrian Arab army. Many times the United States provided air support. NATO became, and the United States became, Al-Qaeda's air force. And we had a campaign of U.S. fighter pilots and Marines who protested and even began the hashtag, we will not be Al-Qaeda's air force. And we see it until today. If we look at the Golan Heights, for example, this particular region here, for several years, terrorist networks affiliated with Al-Qaeda received medical treatment by the IDF. They received support from the IDF, and this is not something that that is hidden. This is something that the Zionist military confesses to and prides itself in and refers to it as humanitarian aid. In Iraq, we saw that there were areas where several times the Hashd al-Shaabi and the resistance front will be advancing towards ISIS, and then the U.S. would provide air cover and strike the positions of the resistance, whether it be Qatar al-Hezbollah or other factions of Hashd al-Shaabi. So yeah, definitely the United States has good terrorists and it has bad terrorists. The truth of the matter is most of the time, those they refer to as bad terrorists are more often than not freedom fighters, those who are on the side of humanity, on the side of the oppressed, like Hajj Qasem Soleimani. It is baffling that the United States would see a group such as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham or even Jabhat al-Nusra see them as legitimate Syrian rebels, as they'd call them, Syrian resistance, and then view Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and Haj Qasim Soleimani as